Welcome to Money Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment, and strategic decision-making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis, and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. Today is our 10th episode of an underlying series in partnership with Morningstar South Africa and their head of investments, Sean Neertling, called Mind Over Markets, where we provide the latest insights on monthly investment trends and market developments. Today, we are diving into what is called the deep seek effect in inverted commas and how this Chinese tech startup has shifted investor sentiment and challenged long-held market narratives. As we all know, financial markets are prone to look for news that has the potential to trigger shifts in investor behavior. Unexpectedly good news tends to increase risk-taking as growth forecasts are revised upwards, while unexpectedly not so good news tends to decrease risk-taking and usually precedes market sell-offs. To help me understand the psychology of all of this, I have Sean back in the studio today. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, everyone. Glad to be back, and hi to your listeners as well.
Before we dive into the specifics of DeepSeek's impact, Sean, maybe you can just give us a quick overview of what is happening in the global equity markets right now.
Sure, Ruan. So I think if we split this broadly into, let's call it macro and financial markets, there are a few key themes, I suppose, that are driving equity markets right now. So on the broader macro and political side, I think fairly consistent with what most people expected is that the Trump presidency is causing a fair amount of uncertainty. I think firstly, in terms of the deal-making approach with regards to tariffs, and then more recently, a fairly antagonistic stance towards Ukraine in terms of just brokering negotiations with Russia. So I think firstly, you know, on the tariff side, we've seen, you know, threats towards neighbors Mexico and Canada, China, BRICS, and even towards the European Union. So I think, you know, the current playbook doesn't necessarily differentiate it much around, let's call it, trade partners and allies. On the other side, we've also seen some retaliatory, let's call it, tariff threats from some of those countries. So this increased uncertainty that we're seeing around geopolitics is adding to the already, let's call it, heightened market volatility around, I suppose, on the macro side, the increased, let's call it, uncertainty around interest rates, inflation, and probably growth trajectory. And then I think if we zoom in on the market, another trend that we're seeing, I suppose, playing out at this point in financial markets is U.S. equity and U.S. tech, largely lagging developed and emerging markets, you know, as we come into the year. And that's very much a reversal of, I suppose, what most investors are accustomed to. And given the concentration levels in U.S. and U.S. tech in particular, broader market returns have been under pressure. And I think what we're starting to observe is this rotation towards countries and regions that are somewhat more attractively priced and were largely sort of shunned, I suppose, in the more recent past. So I think, you know, right now it's a sentiment shift that we're seeing potentially away from U.S. equities, largely supported by better valuations and fundamentals in regions like, let's call it, Europe, the UK, Asia, and even as far as Latin America. So that's largely a positive trend, but that rotation and, let's call it, slow unwind of U.S. tech has been especially painful for markets since the start of the year. And then I think just bringing it back to DeepSeek, that was probably the catalyst, you know, that I suppose triggered a lot of the shift, with China mostly being the main beneficiary for that.
Let's talk about DeepSeek. Media reports stated that this tech startup developed an AI product that is both high quality and significantly more affordable than its competitors. It has already thrown the market a curveball, as you just mentioned. But how will its emergence influence global market sentiment going forward?
I think the main observation is that the emergence of DeepSeek is largely challenging what appeared to be a fairly well-entrenched, let's call it, belief around the competitive advantage of U.S. tech. I think those beliefs have largely fueled, let's call it, overly exuberant market sentiment towards the U.S. And on the other side of that, you know, particularly negative sentiment towards markets that were largely perceived as not having that growth runway of the U.S. So there's an economic part to that where, you know, I think regions around the world have struggled post-pandemic to generate strong economic growth. While in the US, you know, despite a few blips, the US economy has been fairly resilient. So I think, you know, if you zoom in and you look at the US market in particular, if you stack exceptional performance on top of a resilient, you know, economic growth And also you look at the leading tech companies that are priced to almost grow perpetually, you get a US market cycle that historically has attracted a lot of capital. And again, what we're seeing now is potentially the start of a rotation as investor sentiment comes in a bit, particularly on the US, on consideration that US tech could be somewhat frothy, maybe a bit too optimistic. The growth runway of those companies could be a bit more challenged. And then just bringing it back again to the political and geopolitical side, trade policy could have somewhat adverse effects, both on that economy and on companies that are doing business outside the US. So I think, you know, the DeepSeek effect is largely playing out in a way where it's questioning the narrative that's been built into markets. And it's less about, let's call it I suppose, attractiveness of China or the unattractiveness of the US at this stage, but really how those belief systems are starting to be broken down.
One of the key narratives you just mentioned is US exceptionalism and whether the Mag 7 are under pressure. Maybe we can just discuss some of their historical performance, the role of AI, and, you know, kind of the monopolistic nature of US tech in the markets.
Yeah, and so I mean that's a really good point. I think, you know, I think if you go back and you look at the last 2 years, US equities largely led by US tech have delivered in excess of 20% year on year. So phenomenal returns, you know, coming out of the pandemic. So again, it feeds back into this existing market belief, you know, that US tech companies have, or let's call it have had, an almost oligopoly type control on anything around AI, semiconductors, and largely transformative technology that potentially changes the way that the world looks in the future. A lot of that has been embedded and woven into the story of US exceptionalism, which you've seen largely emerge this year. So it's a more recent theme, but it's mostly a continuation of, I suppose, the Magnificent Seven theme. And also, if you cast your mind back to what was called TINA, you know, there is no alternative. And those stories have largely positioned the US as and US tech in particular, as being the only game in town in terms of generating returns for clients. So I think a lot of that has been baked into market prices, specifically for these leading companies like NVIDIA, like Broadcom, like Microsoft, that are at the forefront of technology that's probably leading to a structural shift. And I think a lot of that was priced into markets, and it sort of justified the strong perceived barriers to entry. What you're starting to see now is that the US might not have a lead that is as surmountable or insurmountable as what people think. And again, that's what you're seeing in terms of playing out in the market at the moment.
Sean, now with DeepSeek entering the picture, how will this competition benefit the market by improving accessibility or driving innovation?
Yeah, and so DeepSeek has, I suppose, been positioned as being built at, you know, significantly lower cost with a model that's a lot more efficient. So it performs in line, you know, with the best AI competing technologies. I think it's too early to tell whether there's, you know, whether these suggested cost reductions are feasible, both in terms of developing and maintaining highly complex AI models on the language side. But I think zooming out actually, or zooming in on that, actually takes focus of the bigger picture. So there's probably three, let's call it key questions that I think markets are really grappling with at this stage. So I think the first one is, you know, how far behind is China, I suppose, in the tech race? Or maybe put differently, how far ahead is the US? The second, again, is related to that. But if these models can be developed at much lower cost than previously thought, what does that mean for margins of these companies, and what does the earnings potential look like? And then again, because I think what is likely to happen here, if models can be developed at a much lower cost, at improved efficiencies, you know, are the barriers to entry as strong as expected? And how easy is it to produce a viable product? So I think what the market is grappling with here is, you know, all these expected growth rates that have been priced into the leading incumbents, you know, as sustainable as what's thought, and how competitive does that market look like? From a consumer perspective, you know, I think we've seen this with the internet and even going further back to the advent of the PC, that more competition ultimately reduces costs for end consumers. So having competition is net positive for the market as a whole. I think the way it's playing out at the moment is that, you know, potential returns could be somewhat more volatile, but it is massively positive in terms of the shifts that you're seeing. So investors moving towards a more diversified approach, not putting all their eggs in the so-called US basket. And even if it's not sustainable, I think what it does is it potentially disrupts the existing US leadership. The one thing I will say about that, though, is that it's very important to distinguish between, let's call it, startup companies that are developing products that feed into the AI space, and to distinguish those from, you know, very well-established businesses like the US tech leaders are. They may be expensive, but they've got very established business models with strong fundamentals and what we would probably call, you know, very wide moats. So that's an important distinction to make as well.
Sean, with US exceptionalism, the narrative of US exceptionalism almost by extension has implied that emerging markets, particularly China, is uninvestable. Can you explain why many investors are hesitant to allocate capital to China?
I think the story around emerging markets being uninvestable is really the other side of the US exceptionalism theme. EM is perceived to be everything that the US is not. A struggling economy or struggling economies, highly regulated, government-controlled capital markets that are not especially friendly to external shareholders and investors. I think if you look at China, again, you know, geopolitics heightened and geopolitical risk heightened. The alignment to Russia through BRICS and the potential tariff and trade wars with the US, I think that's largely kept investors on the sidelines for a number of years. I think, you know, that being said, China does have some real challenges. We just think at Morningstar that this is already priced into equity markets. So I think it's evident that the Chinese consumer is spending less than what they historically has had. The economy needs support and stimulus. And I suppose that strong industrial-led growth that we saw, I suppose, between 2000 and 2015, that's largely sort of come to an end. So I think what you're seeing now is until the emergence of DeepSeek, you know, it didn't appear that, you know, global investors were pricing even a low probability that tech could support, let's call it, that next leg of Chinese growth. So again, what we're currently seeing here is a shift in the narrative from overly negative on China and emerging markets to maybe it's not as bad as what initially thought. And I think, you know, that is going to be, again, net positive for unlocking some type of returns for more patient investors allocating there.
Sean, we've seen China's Hang Seng Tech Index deliver strong returns, up around 30% year to date, actually. How much of this can be attributed to DeepSeek's rise, or is it more due to broader market fundamentals?
You know, and that's a really good question. I think, you know, coming into the year, most emerging market managers were actually underweight, approximately 10% underweight China. And that's despite having an investable group of companies that would largely fit into our assessment of having, let's call it, wide economic moats at Morningstar. So yeah, I'm talking about companies like Tencent and Alibaba that, you know, trade at a fairly deep discount to what we think is their fair value. But they have well-entrenched, again, established business models, high market share in China, and probably a really long growth runway. I think DeepSeek, if you I suppose, look to a portion between sentiment and fundamentals, I think DeepSeek can largely be seen as the catalyst here. And when you throw in attractive valuations on top of that, you get a very pronounced price effect that leads to the types of returns that we've seen from China this year. So it's not altogether dissimilar to around September last year when the government introduced or announced stimulus measures to boost the economy. And I'd actually say based on that, and especially given the pronounced price moves and general underweight China positions in the market, it would appear that investors are trying to almost time an entry point into the country instead of holding more dedicated positions. Again, that would largely contrast to the way we've thought about allocating to China, where we hold, let's say, dedicated overweight positions. But I think, you know, again, it's difficult to attribute to a portion, but I'd say the moves we've seen year to date, mostly down to a sentiment shift. The underlying companies in China are still cheap in both absolute and relative terms versus their US peers. So I don't think we've seen a fundamentals driven, let's call it, re-rating come through just yet.
One of the major takeaways from today's discussion is that investors are starting to look to diversify more, looking beyond the US for opportunities. What are some of the key risks and rewards of increasing exposures to emerging markets?
So emerging markets tend to be incredibly volatile in terms of delivering performance. And sometimes from an investment perspective, that can be very difficult to stomach. However, in saying that, I think equating volatility to risk is a dangerous thing. The most dangerous thing I would say is paying too much for any asset versus what it's worth and suffering permanent capital losses from that. So I think if you look at that, I suppose that framing in the context of emerging market equities, currently they are trading at a discount to what they're worth, so especially cheap, particularly some regions. And I do think that valuation discount provides an important buffer, again, for the volatility of expected returns. So I think there's so much bad news that's already, you know, priced into things on the emerging market side. And the unlock of value largely comes from, again, that sentiment being a little less negative than what people think. I think the way we've really thought about this at Morningstar, if we find, you know, these pricing inconsistencies across both developed and emerging markets and also in multi-asset portfolios, then on balance, that provides a really, let's call it a robust proposition for protecting and growing capital and supporting clients in meeting their investment goals. But I think to directly answer your question, you know, the risk, I suppose, that most people would perceive would be volatility. But that volatility in the current environment is potentially the price that investors would need to pay in order to unlock really good long-term gains for themselves in terms of meeting their goals.
Sean, are there particular sectors or regions that pique your interest and that investors should be focusing on in 2025?
Sure. So I think, I mean, we think emerging markets as a broad grouping are particularly attractive. If we were to carve that out, I'd say, you know, we continue to see China and Korea as being particularly well-priced. So broadly, we think EM equities trade below what they're worth. And more recently, we've actually tried to break that basket up even more. So, you know, towards Latin America, where Brazil and Mexico are about 80% of the universe. And what we can largely do is control our exposure. So, you know, we're not directly exposed to just a broad basket of companies, but we also get to, I suppose, allocate on a basis where all those positions don't necessarily experience, you know, up and downside at the same point in time. If I was to zoom, I suppose, a bit further out, if we looked at developed markets, Japan, the UK, and broad Europe, still very attractive. We've actually narrowed our underweight to the US, but still remain underweight tech. And I think there we prefer sort of European and some EM exposure as well to get that. And then again, within the US, we think, you know, the more defensive staples, healthcare sectors provide a bit of robustness to portfolios. And then maybe if I was to cite, I think things that trade, I suppose, close to tech, but with a bit of more differentiation, probably telecoms and financials, which we think are more reasonably priced than the whole tech complex.
Sean, before we wrap up, what are some of the biggest lessons investors should take away from the deep seek effect and the broader shifts we've been seeing in global markets?
So I think it's easy and almost perfectly natural to get drawn into stories. Crafting an investment thesis, however, around those narratives, and especially stories that sound overwhelmingly compelling without considering that story might not be completely correct, is not necessarily you know, the best way to approach investing in this climate. So a simple hack, for example, would be, you know, just playing devil's advocate to that, thinking what could go wrong in terms of how you're thinking about a certain position, whether that's a specific asset or a region or a country. Our process at Morningstar is very much collaborative to this extent. So we actually prioritize feedback across the collective research and investment team. And even as portfolio managers, you know, our views are challenged and our beliefs and our biases are actually questioned, you know, before making allocation decisions. So I think, you know, that's maybe the one piece, you know, to not be overly drawn into stories and to, I suppose, almost adopt the devil's advocate to that. The world's a pretty big place and evolving really quickly with tech and AI, largely being an enabler, I suppose, to a world that could look very different from what we're accustomed to. I would say the main thing for us is, trying to time markets, taking concentrated bets on expected short-term winners, or spending time predicting how things will play out, is not necessarily going to make you a better investor. The way we've largely thought about it at Morningstar is identifying your tolerance for risk, choosing a suitable strategy to meet your investment goals, and then staying the course in very choppy and turbulent conditions, is probably the best way to go about things in navigating the current environment.
Well, that brings us to the end of another fantastic discussion around markets and the minds behind them. Thank you, Sean, for your time and insights and for joining us for another episode of Mind Over Markets with Morningstar. We look forward to meeting you next month for another in-depth discussion and some actionable insights. To all our Citywire South African listeners, thank you for tuning in to this episode of Money Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uester, and my producer, Vera Loba De Silva from the Citywire Studios team. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Iono.fm. All Citywire South Africa podcasts and videos are also available on our homepage. So please go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.